This is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Classic FM. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, country, rock, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the websites dictionary.com and onthisday.com. Question number one, what is the history of the current month, March? Is it A, it was the last month of the calendar year in the earliest calendars? Is it B, its name for the Roman god of war, Mars? Is it C, it took its name from the Greek word for spring planting? Or is it D, due to its unstable weather, it's from the phrase mad as a March hare? So where did the current month March get its name anyway? And question number two, it was on this day back in 1943 that Oklahoma by Rodgers and Hammerstein debuted on Broadway. What was the original title of this musical? Was it A, Away We Go? Was it B, Surrey with the Fringe on Top? Was it C, Oh, What a Beautiful Morning? Or was it D, The Time Warp? So what was the original title of the musical, Oklahoma? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of March 29th. Well, it was on this very day back in 1732 that composer Franz Joseph Haydn was born. He's known for helping to develop the classical style. Haydn was a prolific composer. His output includes 108 symphonies, 68 string quartets, 47 piano sonatas, and 20 operas. Haydn, born this day back in 1732. Meanwhile, here in the USA, it was 57 years ago today, 1967, that the Jimi Hendrix Experience began its first British tour. The show featured the first time that Hendrix set a guitar on fire. In 2008, the scorched instrument sold for more than $450,000 at auction. Hendrix's first burning guitar, 1967, today. And in country and folk music news, we have this article, which is a review of The Singing Places, Virginia Astley's 2023 album. 40 years after the pastoral new age of From Gardens Where We Feel Secure, the UK composer once again fuses chamber folk with rural field recordings, conjuring a vivid sense of place. This is published in Pitchfork.com by Shai Thompson on the 12th of December, 2023. Nothing excites Virginia Astley more than the familiar comforts of home. Not the late 70s underground circuit where she got her start, playing gigs at seedy pubs as a member of the new wave outfit Victims of Pleasure. Not the subsequent post-punk wave either, when she had the opportunity to record with titans like Echo and the Bunnymen, and Susie and the Banshees, while on tour with The Teardrop Explodes in 1981, she played in a group called The Ravishing Beauties, contrasting the psychedelic assault of the headlining band with opulent melodic sweeps and her uniquely ghostly vocals. The Beauties never released a record, though they did record in John Peel's BBC studios. But the music they made together laid the groundwork for the delicate soundscapes Astley would continue to explore in her solo career. Her debut album, 1983's From Gardens Where We Feel Secure, came 2 years later after the tour wrapped up, with a little that makes her preference for solitude abundantly clear. Gardens was a work of pastoral theater that infused sprightly woodwinds and strings with recordings from the riverside village of Molesford on Thames, looping bleeding livestock and rushing streams into miniature dioramas of rustic life. It would remain the only record of its kind in Astley's catalog for 4 decades, as she explored new modes incorporating song and poetry into her worlds. With her new album, The Singing Places, she returns with another assemblage of field recordings and elegant acoustic arrangements. She's finally revisiting the verdant garden of her imagination. Astley collected sounds for The Singing Places in various locations around the upper bounds of the River Thames, which becomes more rural and sparsely populated the further it stretches away from the bustle of big cities. She said in a recent interview that she's often struck by inspiration while on walks in the countryside. Walking along the Thames is like turning the clock back to eons past. Centuries-old church bells ring out. Rickety water mills creak as they revolve. Astley's footsteps can occasionally be heard trotting well-worn pathways. There's a sense that she's enraptured by the history surrounding her as she passes through sites untouched by industrialization and weathered by the passage of time. To accompany these recordings, Astley weaves languorous musical motifs that drift alongside them. In contrast to the more structured vignettes on From Where the Gardens Where We Feel Secure, The Singing Places is free and fluid, letting the gentle serenade of nature ring without interruption. Woodwinds join a choir of bird calls, then fall away against their sustained chirping. Strings swell into a lovely waltz, but never overwhelm the rippling of the water. It's structured as one continuous 27-minute piece, with each movement effortlessly flowing into the next via some deft editing. It sounds like she is simply strolling from one idyllic scene to the next. As the album begins to wind down, the birdsong heard at the start of the record creeps back into the foreground. Astley plays a lifting refrain on her piano, responding to the lively chatter from the treetops with the spirited song of her own. She gradually brings the music to a halt, ceding the record's final moments to the chorus of an English country garden. The Singing Places reads like an oral map of Astley's favorite spots. Her playing guides your ear toward the beautiful music that was already there. And in our classical music news, The Beatles' Let It Be was inspired by a classical piece popular at weddings. This article is written by Matthew Trzynski, on the 28th of December 2023 in CheatSheet.com. The Beatles' Let It Be is one of several pop songs inspired by Pachelbel's canon. In his 2020 book, A Sound Mind, How I Fell in Love with Classical Music and Decided to Rewrite Its Entire History, music writer Paul Morley discussed the impact of Johann Pachelbel's Canon in D, a piece of classical music also known as Pachelbel's Canon. Johann Pachelbel's Canon in D major is the original source of ambient music, he said. It was written possibly for his mentee, Johann Bach's, J.S. Bach's father, wedding in 1694. More likely for just the kind of ordinary domestic function Telemann's table music was designed for. And after being rediscovered in the 1920s, it became a wedding ceremony favorite, a little less used than Here Comes the Bride. Numerous pop songs, including Let It Be, I Should Be So Lucky, Streets of London, All Together Now, and Don't Look Back in Anger, were influenced by the structure, chord sequence, and mood of that work, and pop artists from Boko Haram to Aerosmith, Coolio, Green Day, Avril Lavigne, and Spice Girls, and Maroon 5 have made good use of it, he added. TSO even made it into a Christmas canon. The canon's magnetic two-bar bass pattern and repeated melody called Pachelbel the godfather of pop. The Beatles' Let It Be became a massive hit in the United States. There it topped the Billboard Hot 100 for 2 weeks, staying on the chart for 14 weeks. The tune appeared on the album Let It Be. That record was number one on the Billboard 200 for 4 weeks, staying on the chart for 79 weeks altogether. Let It Be was a huge commercial success, and it might not be the same without Pachelbel. And in music research and technology, we have this article titled, Why and How Music Moves Us. This is written by Jennifer L.W. Fink in Pfizer.com, Wellness 2024. Life seems to go on without effort when I'm filled with music. This is stated by George Eliot. Instinctually, intuitively, we know that music makes life better. For millennia, humans have used music to soothe our souls and comfort pain. Parents worldwide sing lullabies to the young and mark special occasions such as birthdays, graduations, and weddings with song. We rely on music to help us power through workouts and tackle tasks we'd rather ignore, and we manipulate our moods with melodies. Music is so deeply woven into the fabric of our being, in fact, that it can't help us connect with those who have suffered significant cognitive loss. Some nearly non-communicative people with Alzheimer's disease sing along and engage in conversation when music from their youth is played. Former dancers' bodies move instinctively to familiar tunes, even though activities of daily living now challenge their coordination. How does music elicit such a powerful effect on the mind? Listening to or making music increases blood flow to brain regions that generate and control emotions. The limbic system, which is involved in processing emotions and controlling memory, lights up when our ears perceive music. The chills you feel when you hear a particularly moving piece of music may be the result of dopamine, a neurotransmitter that triggers sensations of pleasure and well-being. As your brain becomes familiar with a particular song, your body may release dopamine upon hearing just the first few notes of the song. Just as Pavlov's dogs learned to associate food with a ringing bell and eventually began drooling at the sound of a bell, even when no food was in sight, our bodies actively anticipate pleasure upon hearing familiar notes. Interestingly, music can affect our mood even if we can't recognize or replicate the notes in rhythm. Science has documented numerous instances of people who suffered brain injuries and lost their ability to distinguish melodies, but retained the ability to recognize the emotion conveyed by music. Researchers noted that these patients had sustained damage to their temporal lobes of the brain, a region involved in comprehending melody. Their frontal lobes, which play a role in emotional regulation, were unaffected. Music is complex. It involves pitch, timbre, rhythm, dynamics, and so much more. Decoding music is quite a task for the brain, as it must integrate the sequentially ordered sounds into a coherent musical perception, according to an article published in the Journal of Biology. The mental processes involved in knitting individual sounds together into the overall perception of a song is quite similar to the process the brain goes through in reading, which involves first recognizing individual letters and sounds, and then ultimately gleaning meaning from sentences and paragraphs. Working memory is involved in both processes, and scientists believe there's a great deal of overlap between working memory for musical stimuli and for verbal stimuli. Emotions, of course, enhance memory. Most adults can still recall every word of the songs they loved in high school, largely because adolescence is a time of heightened emotion. Evidence suggests that listening to music may help brain cells process information more efficiently and may facilitate the brain's ability to adapt. According to a study published in the scientific journal Brain, adults who suffered a stroke and listened to music daily experienced significantly greater gains in verbal memory and cognition after 2 months than stroke survivors who listened to audiobooks and those who didn't listen to either music or books on a daily basis. Women listen to music when in labor, and loved ones frequently play music while sitting with family members who are close to death. The pain-relieving tendencies of music has been ascribed to music's ability to distract. When our minds are focused on a beloved melody, we don't notice our aching back quite as much. Music also increases overall feelings of well-being, thank you, dopamine, which may decrease pain perception. Some scientists suspect that music's effect on the physical body, though, may be at least partially rooted in the fact that sound waves are ultimately vibrations. Vibroacoustic therapy uses low-frequency sound to produce vibrations that are applied directly to the body. At least 7 scientific studies have shown improvement in motor function in individuals with cerebral palsy treated with vibroacoustic therapy. And finally, it may take scientists years to fully untangle music's actions in the brain. Thankfully, we can enjoy music's benefits without fully understanding the science. And in rock music news, The Who's Roger Daltrey regretted the one time he smashed a guitar. "I'm really sorry I did it," Daltrey told Sean Cavini's Daily Grind podcast. This is written by Daniela Avila on March 14, 2024 in People magazine. For Roger Daltrey, guitars are of sentimental value. During a Tuesday appearance, The Who frontman recalled the one time he smashed his guitar and how much it hurt him to do it. "Fans never came to hear the music, they came to see the guitar being broken," Daltrey, 80, said of The Who's shows. "The trouble is, the guitar was worth 50 gigs. I've only ever smashed one guitar, and I'm really sorry I did it," he continued. "I don't know why, just this thing came over me. I've always regretted it." Daltrey equated the feeling to something vastly personal. "I thought, I shouldn't have done that. That was like killing the wife." In his 2018 memoir, Daltrey opened up about it witnessing The Who's guitarist Pete Townshend smashing guitars at concerts. "It was heartbreaking. When I remembered how much I'd struggled to get my first guitars, it was like watching an animal being slaughtered, an expensive animal that we'd have to replace with another expensive animal before the next gig," he wrote in his book. "From then on, the audience expected us to break our instruments. It became our thing." That's sad. So, how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, what is the history of the current month, March? Is it A, it was the last month of the calendar year in the earliest calendars? Was it B, its name for the Roman god of war, Mars? Is it C, it took its name from the Greek word for spring planting? Is it D, due to its unstable weather, it's from the phrase mad as a March hare? Correct answer, answer B, the Roman god of war, Mars. As noted in a 2/28/22 article in dictionary.com titled, "Does March the Month Have Anything to Do with Marching?" The name March is ultimately derived from the Latin word Martius, named after Mars, the Roman god of war. Martius was the name of the first month in the original Roman calendar. Along with January, May, and June, March is one of several months named after a god. In ancient Rome, March marked the start of the military campaign season. While it is tempting to connect the word march, as in march into battle, with this month, to march comes from the old French marcher, to tread, move, possible from a Frankish, ancient Germanic language, root meaning to mark, pace out. Related to mark, by the way, hares, which look like big rabbits, though they are different species, mate during the month of March, when they are noted for the wild and excitable behavior, hence the expression, mad as a March hare. The phrase has been in use since the 1500s. Lewis Carroll also referenced the March hare in 1865's Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, which features the character, the March hare. The Roman ruler, Numa Pompilius, is traditionally credited with adding January and February to the calendar, thus making March the third month of the year. While many have adopted this calendar, the Gregorian calendar, some cultures and religions still celebrate the start of the new year on March the 1st. In Iran, New Year's Day is celebrated on March 21st. And the answer to our second question? It was on this day back in 1943 that Oklahoma by Rodgers and Hammerstein debuted on Broadway. What was the original title of this musical? Was it A, Away We Go, B, Surrey with the Fringe on Top, C, Oh, What a Beautiful Morning, or D, The Time Warp? The Time Warp was from the Rocky Horror Picture Show. while the Surrey Song and the Beautiful Morning Song were tunes within the musical, but not the title of the production. So the correct answer is answer A, Away We Go. As noted in OKHistory.org, after receiving the Green Grow the Lilac script, Rodgers and Hammerstein went to work adapting that play into a musical. Oscar Hammerstein II wrote the script, also known as the book, as well as lyrics, while Richard Rodgers composed the musical scores. Hammerstein wrote the lyrics to the songs before the music was even finished. They originally titled the musical Away We Go and opened the show in New Haven, Connecticut in 1943. Later, the title of the musical was changed to Oklahoma, and two more songs, including the title song Oklahoma, were added. On March 31, 1943, Oklahoma opened on Broadway at the St. James Theater with Robin Mamoulian as the director and Agnes DeMille as the choreographer. The musical received excellent reviews, and the first run closed May 29, 1948, after 2,212 performances. So in honor of Hendrix's first burning guitar, let's close out with his All Along the Watchtower.
Must be some kind of way out of here, said a joker to the thief. There's too much confusion, I can't get no relief.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, to make an appointment with Bill McClure, go ahead and phone 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.